National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Recourse to the Blessed Mother has always been a fail-proof response to the scandal of sin for the Church, and Catholics across the country turn to the Rosary on October 7th, the Feast of Our Lady of the Rosary. Joining us on Register Radio is Jennifer Roback Morris of the Ruth Institute, who is among those who will stand in community and in prayer. But first, we turn to Edward Penton, who has been reporting on the opening days of the Synod of Youth in Rome. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio. This week, the Synod of Bishops begins its 15th Ordinary General Session. It was convoked to discuss the themes of young people, the faith, and vocational discernment. The sessions take place over 3 weeks' time. It began October 3rd and concludes on October 28th. And of course, it includes bishops and other delegates from around the world. Edward, the sessions of the Synod have only just begun. It's just been a few days. The opening day began with a call for openness. What did the Holy Father say during the opening Mass to set the tone for the gathering?
Yes, well, at the opening Mass, he stressed really to heed the call of the Holy Spirit. He said this before, of course, and he wants to entrust the Holy Spirit to enkindle in people's hearts a concern for the young people and to be concerned for their needs, the spiritual needs, of course, in principle, principally spiritual needs. So it's very much stressing the supernatural, really, the spiritual there in his homily, which is of course expected for the opening Mass. And then in the opening, the first opening session, the first general congregation, he spoke to the Synod Fathers to really remember the mistakes that have been made, the sins of the bishops, the sins of the priests and so forth that we've heard so much of lately, but to be focusing on listening, really, listening right to young people and what their concerns are, and to really be open and welcoming to all of them and help to speak to them where they are and help to understand what their concerns are, and not to have a sort of top-down approach, but to really go out and reach out to them and listen to them. And so that was really the main focus is there.
Of the first day. We should say that these days are very busy in Rome, and of course you're working long hours. We can hear you're on the streets of Rome, and that's quite natural because it's some really long hours for you. But there are many people who have descended on Rome right now. Edward, do you know the numbers? How many people are delegates or a part, official part of the Synod? Do you know those numbers?
Yes, well, we've got about 300 or so altogether, 266 Synod Fathers. We also have 49 auditors, so it's quite a bit more than 300, really, in total. But we have 49 auditors who share their expertise with the Synod Fathers and bring and contribute in that way. They don't have voting rights, but they are allowed to sit in the working groups and to sit in the general congregations and give short speeches, 4-minute speeches, as the others are.
Okay.
Among those are 36 young people, 36 young people in the auditors. So that's quite a significant number. Of course, you know, unlike any other synods, that's obviously a large number of young people present.
That's right. That's right.
And somebody said, who was in the Synod Hall, that they noticed just how many young, the youth of the Synod as a whole, you could see, even among the bishops, they seem younger.
Sure.
So there's quite a predictable emphasis there on young people.
Of course, and there should be, of course. The other group that descends on Rome during this time are journalists. I expect there are many more journalists. Matthew Bunsen's on his way to Rome, and so he'll be there for part of the Synod. There is a significant number of journalists as well, right?
Yes, so quite a few. I don't know if it's as many as last time, but certainly there seem to be quite a few people here from around the world and from all kinds of different agencies. But obviously, I mean, this synod, I think I may have said before, I mean, the synods under Pope Francis have become quite big occasions, right. much bigger than they used to be, also more controversial. That has also led to more public attention and more media attention.
Before we get into the highlights of this week in terms of what has been said thus far, or even some of these controversies, let's turn and talk a little bit more about the structure of the synod days. I mean, have interventions started? What is the structure of a synod day?
Yes, well, it starts off with general congregations, which is when all the synod fathers meet together in the synod hall, and they have series of talks given, 4-minute talks by each synod father. These will, I think, later in this week or maybe next week, we'll have the working groups where they split up into language groups, and they discuss various themes in those groups, and then they come back to the general congregations again. Now, these general congregations take place morning and afternoon, and they're quite lengthy. I think there's 20 or so each session.
Okay.
And what's novel about this time is that the Pope has introduced a three-minute silence after five interventions. So,
okay.
In order to help the Synod Fathers discern that listening that he talks about, exactly.
Right.
So. That seems to have gone down well, and people have really appreciated that, it seems.
Okay. And is it during these general sessions that they do get to hear from some of these youth and observers as well?
Yes, I think they do. The youth auditors will speak also at these general congregations, I believe, but later on. We've had, so far, we've had some well-known bishops speak, like Archbishop Chaput, of course, mm-hmm. and then Bishop Robert Barron and Archbishop Anthony Fisher of Sydney, Australia. These are a few of the ones who've spoken so far early on.
And what have some of their interventions been? I mean, what are they saying? What are they appealing for?
Yes. Well, one of the most interesting, I think, was Archbishop Chaput's, because he spoke about something that's been of a concern to a lot of people about this synod, which is that it's possibly being used to by some groups to sort of push through a homosexual agenda. The words, the loaded acronym LGBT found its way into the working document of the synod, and so people have got quite concerned about this. And Archbishop Chaput said that that's not on, that it shouldn't actually be part of the working document. It shouldn't be part of any church document, and it's not something that should be part of church teaching to have identity designated by sexuality. So this was quite an important
intervention, right?
Yes.
And of course, Archbishop Fisher, that you mentioned of Sydney, was making an apology to young people for the failures of the church. So that obviously is another theme that has become prominent, is just talking about the sexual abuse crisis and how that, of course, has affected young people. Edward,
yes.
you mentioned the procedures. And so after the working groups, they come back together and they begin to create a document. And this is the working document it ends up being the final document of the synod. You wrote early in this week about some questions regarding how that procedure of the final document of the synod may come to be. It seems like there's some ambiguity as to what the procedures will be. Can you fill in our audience on that?
Yes. Well, this is possibly connected with the whole push for homosexuality to being accepted, or at least alleged push. This regards the procedure of the synod, which has been changed due to a new apostolic constitution, which the Pope introduced just a few weeks ago. And what this means is that what they might try to do is to not vote on each paragraph of the final document, which they did in the past. And that was quite useful, because if you got a 2/3 majority, had to vote for each paragraph. And by not, if you didn't get that, then it showed, obviously, that there was a lack of consensus in these areas, these particular paragraphs. So that seems to have gone. And what they're going to probably do is vote on the whole document as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Another change that they've introduced is to make the document, the final document, part of the papal magisterium, which is another new thing, which would give it a lot more weight. So, so in a sense, by being able to vote on the whole document by 2/3, it makes it easier for those who want to push through some controversial proposal, because it will go through sort of under the radar, if you like. So this is one of the concerns that people have. But we're going to have to see, because the Synod Secretariat is saying, well, we don't know yet. And, you know, we're going to see how things will play out, whether this procedure will be implemented or not. So it's still an open question.
Yes, it almost sounded as though he wanted to see if controversy really arose throughout these discussions that would merit such kind of individual votes. But I guess it does remain to be seen what will happen. And we already know controversy has existed around the working document. So it's going to be an interesting moment. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing more about the youth themselves and what they have to say, because that seems to be the whole point of this. And I expect that soon their voices will be heard. Edward, of course, we're waiting for next weekend is another special event in Rome that's not necessarily tied to the synod, but it's a canonization. Tell us who's That's being right. canonized. I know it's a handful of people.
Yes. Well, the two main people, of course, are Blessed Paul VI, who's going to be canonized, and Archbishop Oscar Romero, who was, of course, martyred in El Salvador back in the 1980s. So this is going to be a very big canonization, and there, of course, five others, I believe, being canonized as well. So this is going to bring a lot of people to Rome for that. But also, I think that the coincidence, it's no coincidence that it's going to be these are going to happen during the Youth Synod as well, because I think the Pope wants to emphasize, certainly, I think Paul VI's contribution to young people and what he did for young people as well. So I think it's all part of that. And also, I think it's also part of the council, the Second Vatican Council. I think the Pope wants to make Paul VI very much part of, and this synod as part of that sort of time. Because, of course, the synods grew out of the Second Vatican Council.
That's right.
And in fact, the synods were sort of, in a way, to try to sort of keep going, keep the council mood going. And that's what... that's what the synod's trying to do, not in as great a way, but certainly in some form they want to continue that.
That's right. We could basically call Paul VI the father of the synod, and
exactly.
So it is fitting that his canonization is taking place during this synod. Well, Edward, we look forward to your reporting. You've been producing something almost every day for us, and
yes.
showing up frequently on EWTN News Nightly, and so we're very grateful for all that you're bringing to us, and we pray that you have the strength during these very busy days to keep going. So thanks a bunch.
Thanks. Thank you, Jeanette.
When we come back, we'll be joined by a Register columnist, Jennifer Roback Morse, who is inviting all of us to take up our rosaries as an aid in this time of trouble. This is Register Radio on EWTN. More when we return.
Have you heard who's reading the Register? Why, it's Marcus Grota.
I believe EWTN's National Catholic Register is unique from other newspapers in that it not only is committed to reporting the news from the world and the church and our faith, but it does so through the lens of the faithfulness of our Catholic Church.
For a 3-month free subscription to the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 3 months free banner or call 1-800-421-3230.
Bishop Robert Barron.
Just as Fulton Sheen used radio and TV in the last century, we need to continue to use Catholic radio to announce the Catholic faith in the public forum.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
If you're currently an EWTN media missionary or just interested in becoming one, we've got some great news. EWTN Media Missionaries has a new and improved website. EWTNmissionaries.com, designed with you in mind. Our new site is loaded with great features and it's easy to navigate. There are so many different ways that you can help EWTN. Join us in sharing the eternal word with the world. Visit EWTNmissionaries.com today.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and host of Register Radio. And today I welcome Jennifer Roback-Morse, founder of the Ruth Institute, to our show. Jennifer has recently become a columnist on the Register's website and in print, and she's been writing on the effects of the sexual revolution on our culture and the church. And of course, that's part of the work of the Ruth Institute, which we'll talk about a little later in this segment. But this week, her column had a different take. It was a call to prayer. Jennifer, it's a pleasure to have you writing for the Register and on our show. Thanks for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me to be part of the Register. I wrote for the Register a long time ago. And it's nice to be back.
Great. I'm so happy to have you. It's interesting what happens when you make a simple request.
I know.
Things happen. Well, as I was saying in the little intro, you kind of took a turn in what you decided to write about to the Register's audience. And you wrote about a call to prayer, specifically a prayer called to the Rosary. So the title was Combat Scandal with Rosary Around the World. And of course, this is in reference to October 7th, the Feast of the Rosary, where there are many people around the world who will be praying in community. And you will be doing so in Louisiana.
That's right. That's right. And I, first of all, I want to give all due credit to Father Richard Heilman, who really started this whole initiative. And he calls it Rosary Coast to Coast. And anybody who's listening now should go to rosarycoasttocoast.com and check the map that he has about, you know, one page down on his website and find the location that's nearest you so that you can participate. Because he's got over 1,000 sites in the United States lined up. And at last count, he had 44 different countries.
Wow.
So he's done an amazing thing, and I just looked at it and said, "Oh, I want to do that in my town," and so that's what I wrote about in my column. And if my column induces more people to get involved, that's all the better.
That's right. And you know, one of the things that struck me about what you wrote is you said you heard about this big event, this Rosary Coast to Coast, at the same time that you were hearing about disturbing things happening in your own community. And these are not, you know, these big, huge scandals that we see headline after headline about, both related to our country and politicians, but also, unfortunately, related to our church and our faith. But you were hearing about things in your own community that you, you're like, we need to pray. Describe what happened in that week that made you realize you needed to do something on this.
Well, it was in, I guess, late spring, I would say, early summer. You know, I was calling around for another event and just chatting with people and, you know, trying to get people involved with, you know, another project that we had at the Ruth Institute. And I kept stumbling over people saying, you know, we're having trouble in our marriage. We're struggling in our family. We're in counseling, and I would be embarrassed to come. And, you know, just think, what the heck?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because these are good families that you wouldn't have expected them to be having problems, you know. And I thought, you know, doggone it, Louisiana, Lake Charles, Louisiana is a smallish town, you know, 100,000 people. It's not like it's Sin City or something. You know, in fact, it's the opposite of that. It's a very wholesome, down-to-earth, family-friendly,
right,
faith-friendly place. And I'm like, you know, if the good people in this town are having problems, there's a problem. You know, it's not one thing. It's not one person. There's something systemic wrong here. And that's when I said, and right around that same time, I saw that Father Heilman was doing this nationwide effort. And I thought, you know, we better get involved in this because, I'm on the front lines of dealing with family breakdown and family issues all the time. And I see and hear a lot of things, Jeanette. I mean, you know, people tell me stuff. And,
right,
and sometimes it's, you know, I don't even want to say, you know, but it's heartbreaking.
It's heavy.
Right? I mean, what I hear is it's heavy. It's very dark a lot of the time. And so I thought, you know, we really need divine protection here. And the Mother of God wants nothing more than to help us. And she said so, you know, she said so many times, you know. So why not get involved with this? So that's what we're doing. And the people here in Lake Charles are responding very well to it, as I knew they would. I mean, I knew, Jeanette, that this was going to be great, you know. So what we did is we told people, and we put it up on our website, get yourself a group of people together, buy 10 blue T-shirts, and we had a, you know, the T-shirt designed with the picture on it and everything. Buy 10 blue T-shirts, and we'll give you one gold one free, and that will be your decade. The person in gold will be like the Our Father, and the people in the blue will be like the Hail Marys, and we'll just go around the lake as far as we can go, you know. And there's a park there, and you know it's paved, and there's a boardwalk and all that. And you know, we'll meet at the amphitheater, and we'll go as far around as we can make. Well, before the deadline, we sold 500 T-shirts. Okay?
You have many rosaries.
That's like, by my calculation, that's like a lot of rosaries, right? So, and people are still saying, oh, we want to come. We missed the deadline. Can we participate?
Absolutely.
And we're like, sure, just show up, you know. And the colors we picked out are sort of the local university colors. So a lot of people have that color shirt in their closet,
right,
anyhow.
Right.
And so we said, just wear the McNeese shirt. You'll be fine, you know. So I have no idea who's going to show up.
Right. But you know it's going to be big.
I think it's going to be really cool. You know, it's going to be really cool.
We need this.
That's what people think. And I'm not going around saying, oh, you know, we're going to end all the scandals by prayer. I mean, I talk about the scandals. We're very open about that. And, you know, we have our research on the subject and so forth that we talk about all the time. But I think people just have a sense that because of everything that's going on, we want to be involved, you know. And so I don't have to beat that drum. It's just kind of on everybody's mind, you know.
Right.
So that's what I sense is happening. And here's another amazing thing that would never have happened in California. I don't think.
Which is where you moved from.
Which is where I moved from. That's right. I moved from a, shall we say, a little bit less friendly, family-friendly kind of a location. But the Bishop of Lake Charles is going to be present. He's going to lead the mm-hmm. Apostles' Creed of the Rosary. And the Mayor of Lake Charles is going to be present.
Wonderful.
And he's going to lead the Our Father. Okay, I just don't see that happening. Back in my
right,
in a lot of other cities, you know.
From Louisiana, I can appreciate what you're saying. It is a family friendly place, and you're in
right.
one of the tighter family pockets where you are in Lake Charles, and so I have every expectation that there and in many other places in our country, this call for prayer, this organized call for prayer on Sunday is going to be very effective. And
I
it's
think so, too.
So needed. Yeah. It's just so needed because we have we've been faced with this scandal and the hard issues in our own lives, the realities of our own lives. And it's a time to turn to prayer. Now, as you've said, the Ruth Institute and your own columns in the Register have certainly not been all about prayer. It's been a lot about action. And I don't want to
right.
end the show without talking a little bit about the work that you do and the calls for action. I think your article right before this last one on prayer was about becoming activists, community activists, to make sure
right.
change happens. So what is the work of the
right.
Ruth Institute, and how might it help people become involved?
Well, the work of the Ruth Institute is to help Catholics and other non-Catholic Christians, but any Christian really, is to help people to defend the family and to explain why they believe what they believe about marriage and family and human sexuality. That's what we do. And so we equip people largely with scientific and, you know, kind of more secular kinds of knowledge, sociological information, legal documents and things like that. You know, we generally speaking are not in the churchy side of things,
mm-hmm.
you know, even though we're defending church teaching. We're trying to show that there are reasonable reasons for believing what the church teaches, right? That reasons that are available for anyone to see. So we have a number of programs. We have our online work that we do, our regular newsletter that people can sign up for, and every week receive something, along these lines. We have a very active Facebook page, all that kind of thing. But what we're really recommending as a solution to the scandals in the church is two things. First of all, people of faith have got to insist that the truth be told about all of the scandals. You know, we don't want any cover-ups. We don't care if it's our favorite pastor or our favorite bishop. We don't care. We want to know. We want to know what's going on. We want justice for the victims, and we want punishment for the guilty, and we want protection for the innocent, you know, and we have to be clear about that. I think it's very important that there be no hesitation or equivocation about that. And then the second thing is I think the laity really, really need to defend church teaching on marriage, family, human sexuality, the whole package that John Paul II laid out for us so beautifully in the Theology of the Body, the universal call for holiness that includes a universal call to chastity, where chastity means rightly ordered sexuality, right? And we need to talk about it because too many of the clergy will not talk about it, and now we know why they weren't talking about it. So we need to talk about it. You know, the heck with them. I mean, not really the heck with them, but you know what I mean. You know? If they're not going to do it, doggone it, we have to do it.
We've got to hold them to it. Yeah, we've got to hold them to it.
I have not only hold them to it, Jeanette, whether they do it or not. My point is whether they do it or not. No matter what they do, we need to do it.
Absolutely.
That's my point. 100%.
Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. I will mention your book, The Sexual State, How Elite Ideologies Are Destroying Lives and Why the Church Was Right All Along. And, of course, more information can be found at theruthinstitute.org. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.